These headphones are hilariously big. I look like a air traffic controller.
They go well with the top bun.
I like keeping these on all the time. It's ridiculous.
I love those headphones. They sound so good.
They sound great.
You ready?
Oh, yeah. Boom, baby. We're live.
All right.
Well, not really, but you know what I mean.
Should we clap?
Yeah.
Okay.
Clapping?
Yeah. Three, two, one.
It's morphin' time!
Minasan, yokoso, welcome to your favorite cross-cultural deep dive analysis and recap podcast covering Super Sentai and Power Rangers, Kenkyu Sentai Podcast Rangers. My name is Ethan, I use he-him pronouns, and with me is my usual co-host, Andrew.
Hey everybody, my name is Andrew, I also use he-him pronouns.
Also joining us today, as I'm editing the script, is Nelson, our producer.
Hey, I'm Nelson, you guys know me, you know what's up.
You know Nelson's deal.
You know my deal, I'm just, you know... I'm here, and I'm happy to be here.
Nelson, what is King of Sports Pro Wrestling?
That is New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Oh,
International Wrestling Grand Prix.
Okay.
King of Sports, greatest wrestling on the planet.
Can we start a show about that?
There's so much.
There's too much history.
That makes me sad because I love Japan. Pro wrestling.
No, it's great. And
could we just start with the 1992 debacle over the WCW belt?
Oh, when Ric Flair left and they had to...
No. When Ric Flair lost the belt in Japan and then lied about it.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about when he left.
It's the lead up to all of that. But,
yeah.
But no, Flair lost the belt in a mat anyway. Yeah, it's the worst. It's the worst.
There's a lot of debacles with belts and Ric Flair in 1992. There's a lot of debacles with Ric Flair in general.
What a dude.
That's a whole other can of worms. If you ever want to see Ric Flair on a daily basis... go to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He goes to the same bar every day.
I bet he does.
That's and so strange.
You got a hair on your shoulder.
Thank you, Nelson.
Yeah. I have several hairs on my shoulders, but they're under my shirt, so you can't see them.
Okay.
What a comedian.
Today, we're discussing Kyoryu Sentai Zyuranger Episode 11, Goshujin-sama, My Master, and Power Rangers Season 1 Episode 11, No Clowning Around. Before we get into the recap, though, I wanted to return briefly to Episode 8 of Zyuranger, Kyofu Shunkanui. In our coverage of that episode, I called attention to the timeline discrepancies regarding Dora Circe's previous misadventures in Greece, which did not exist in the time of the ancient tribes. While I was watching episodes and working on scripts last night and this morning, I was watching our video cut of our episode 8, and I noticed that Goshi mentions that Dora Circe was active in Greece 2,000 years ago, which does make a lot more sense than 170 million, but it does raise some other questions. Has Barza been chronicling monster incidents for the entire time the Zyurangers have been asleep? Were there more monsters than just Dora Circe wandering the Earth in that time? And did Goshi wake up and immediately memorize the entire Dino Denki? I just feel like this raises more questions. It answers the one question of how do they have a record of Greece from 170 million years ago? It wasn't from 170 million years ago. And obviously, I can see Barza keeping that chronicle.
Sure.
But... I do have other questions.
So while we're doing continuity fixes, I also have a problem that I noticed while I was watching episode 2.
Okay.
Episode 2.
Of
the podcast?
Of the podcast the and the show.
All right.
And this is something we've discussed a couple of times.
Sentai Rangers?
Rangers.
Okay.
This is something that we've discussed a couple of times in the show. When we first started this, we watched Food Fight.
Out of Order, yeah.
Out of Order.
Yes.
And... I was going through the show in my media library. I ripped some DVDs into Plex, and Food Fight shows up as episode 2. And I was noticing this as I was getting ready to watch these episodes, and it really pissed me off. It made me very angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did some digging, and so we have already established that Food Fight was the second VHS released. Episodes 1 and 2 were released on one tape.
Yeah.
Food Fight was the second tape to be released.
So technically it's episode 3.
Right. You would expect it to be episode 3, right. But Food Fight was actually broadcast second. They skipped episode 2 and broadcast Food Fight.
Well, they would have skipped 2 through 5, right?
Right. Yeah. is episode six. They just threw episode six into the broadcast schedule early. Apparently, they were redubbing some audio for episode two.
Oh.
And Food Fight was finished. So they just threw it in.
What a mess.
This fits with our perception of the initial Power Rangers production. It's like extremely hectic.
Yeah. I will say, having revisited some of those earlier episodes, and I've been going back and watching our show, as I'm going back and revisiting those earlier episodes again, the show has gotten so much better.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that today's Power Rangers episode is a great example of how much better the show has gotten. I hated this episode.
Yeah.
No. But I think it's a great example of how much better the show has
really
gotten.
Really bad on multiple levels. In terms of production quality, significantly higher.
Yeah.
We've watched three episodes for today's recording session, and I don't remember which one was in it, but you mentioned in a recent episode how well they were matching Rita's dialogue to her.
Yeah, there are a couple of really good moments in this one.
There's some good ones.
Yeah.
Like they are working within the bounds of the material available to them. They're doing a good job.
They finally figured it out.
It only took them about 10 episodes to get there, which, you know, it's about the same here, you know.
this was like a brand new territory. This was not simply dubbing something,
right,
which had been going on for,
decades
at this point, maybe even 50 years. This is a different sort of a thing.
Okay, I guess that's enough ado.
Without further ado, let's get into the recap.
Kyoryu Sentai!
Goshujin-sama was written by Sugimura Noboru and Araki Kenichi, two names we've seen before, and directed by Watanabe Katsuya, which is a name we haven't seen before.
So Noboru has directed a lot of, or he has written a lot of
He's
these,
the
right?
chief writer on Sentai,
okay.
like
okay.
The Sentai franchise for decades.
Okay.
Yeah. I looked into him briefly because I considered it, and I might still do a research topic on him specifically.
Sure.
But he is like the head writer for the studio.
Okay.
The episode opens with Toadpot doing some fishing from the Bandra Palace on the moon. Please do not concern yourself with the orbital mechanics involved. Toadpot dredges up a magic lamp containing a genie, or djinn, as he's called in this episode. He looks a little bit like if Anubis was the god of weird parties. Toadpot and Bookback send a challenge letter to the Zoo Rangers, thinking that djinn is their new trump card. But in the tussle between the Rangers and djinn, the magic lamp gets blown away and found by a group of kids. The kids meet up at their extremely safe and OSHA-approved hideout in an abandoned warehouse.
I was digging the vibe of that because it...
Oh, no. I would have been all over that place if I was 10.
Like, as a kid, like I...
Rusty nails? Oh, man. I don't know what that
the
is.
The most sketchy places.
Oh, yeah.
Like
it's like on the wharf, like there's boats going past and the river's just right there.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'll like go on these hikes, like taking my dogs for walks, and like I'll find these little spots like in the woods.
Oh, yeah. Like, just like abandoned houses and all kind of stuff.
Yeah. High school me would have loved smoking weed back here. Yeah. You know?
Jin almost immediately starts granting their wishes for Ferraris, all-you-can-eat chicken, and manga. They also play video games and have a dance party. I can't find a single fault with this.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, the Ferrari doesn't make sense, really, because it's like, you don't even know how to drive. It's not just that you can't legally, but
okay.
You don't even know how.
He's getting future wealth.
But
that's true.
This kid's got to be honest. If I was 10 years old and was 8, I would have absolutely been wishing for, give me a Lamborghini, give me some fried chicken. I'm all about it.
Oh, yeah. The Ferrari is the only one I have even a mild quibble with. The rest of this just is awesome.
Did you not know any car kids when you were a kid?
Car kids?
Probably. Car kids. Kids that were obsessed with cars.
Oh, well, I mean,
I had Hot Wheels.
Yeah.
Like,
because I'm thinking like car guys, like guys, you know, put all their money into a beat up Toyota, but like a 7 year old.
I mean, so my cousin, he'll be on this show at some point, probably.
Lawson?
Lawson.
Okay.
Anyway, my cousin has been obsessed with cars his whole life. When he was a kid, he absolutely would have wished for some kind of fancy car.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
It's just funny that it's a whole Ferrari, but it's just in this abandoned shack of a warehouse.
Yeah.
It's not doing anything or going anywhere. He just thinks it's cool to look at and sit in the seat, which I can't argue with. And then the kid with the fried chicken is just having a blast. He is like transcending.
See, they flew too close to the sun, literally, when the little girl wished to be able to fly, which I thought was cool that the djinn gave her a magic carpet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I made a note that the magic carpet, like practical effect, is like perfect.
Yeah, sure. It's real good.
I mean, it just lifts up off the ground. You can't see any of the guidelines. And it just flies. And it's so cool. As Nelson mentions, one girl goes for a magic carpet ride. And while she's out and about, she's spotted by both the Z-Rangers and Bandora's minions. And both forces converge on the kid's hideout. The Rangers and the minions fight over the lamp until Bandora herself appears rather magnificently and destroys the lamp, making Jin both powerless and homeless. However, Jin is fairly certain that Bandora will construct a new lamp and he will be forced to inhabit it and do her bidding. The Z-Rangers and the children resolve to find all the pieces of Jin's original lamp so that this does not come to pass, but they are not successful before Bandora returns to Earth with an evil red lamp, and Jin takes on a giant monstrous form. The Rangers summon Daijujin, but only Geki and Goshi remain to fight Jin. The other three Rangers leave to continue searching for the missing pieces of Jin's lamp. Just before Dorjin goes in for a killing blow, the children find the last piece of Jin's original lamp, and he returns to his home. Mei destroys the evil lamp with her arrow, and Bandora retreats. Everyone celebrates, and the Z-Rangers agree to steal the lamp and return it to the sea so that Jin's powers can never be used for evil again. The end.
Yeah. See, this episode got, like, a legit, like, oh, shit moment out of me when Bandora showed up and was, like...
She appears with, like, lightning and thunder. It's very cool.
It seems like she's gonna, like telekinesis the lamp over to her, but she just picks it up and blows it up. Yeah. I was like, okay.
No, this really demonstrates, like...
She's
one,
evil.
One, she's evil, and two, she is a witch. She knows how magic works.
Yeah.
She's a powerful sorceress, and she will use her power to mess things up for people.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, like, stealing this djinn, who, by the way, mentions Aladdin by name multiple times, is apparently supposed to be the genie from the story of Aladdin, which is crazy. But she, like, has a fundamental understanding of the rules of this magical being. Like, if I blow up your lamp and present a new one, you have to live in it.
Yeah.
That's your whole deal.
Them's the rules.
It's a really cool evil red lamp, too.
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder if she sold anything that looked like that in her curio shop.
Oh!
Oh, my God.
Maybe that's where it came from. The lady who played Bandora. So we have a research topic on.
That was like episode 3.
I think so.
It was early.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah.
It's not as good as Kyofu Shunkanui as for being a one-off.
Yeah.
And like, there seems to be maybe some degree of strange orientalism happening with the genie. That's a little bit weird. He's got like harem pants on. He looks like a jackal. But it's not really focused on. And it's like, it's more of a pop culture Arabian Nights. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a thing that, like, I feel like somebody would take offense to it, but
it's like background radiation level.
Yeah.
Exoticism. It's not it's less jarring, for example, than Ernie walking out of the kitchen at the youth center with two Hawaiian women in leis and hula skirts
him. I would say it's less jarring than Mr. Tickle Sneezer. Or if you want to take somebody that looks similar to the djinn, Mr. Popo from Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
I'd say it's a little less jarring than that.
Significantly. Significantly.
Maybe we'll talk more about Dragon Ball Z at some point, but Mr. Popo is such a fascinating character because he looks like a racist caricature of a black man, but he is also like...
When you find out what it is, it's okay.
He's deeply steeped in Japanese folklore and not actually...
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where once you like... actually do the digging, you're like, all right, well, I'm not mad at that. That's fine.
Yeah.
I like this episode. I don't have much more to say about it. This is the first episode of Sentai that I watched on my large TV instead of at my desk. The intro to this show goes so hard.
Yeah, dude.
And like, I know I've been saying that about Power Rangers recently, but like the cinematography on this show really stands up.
The little jumps at the beginning, man, they get me so hype every time.
At this point, I mean, this is 1992 or 3, and then Go Ranger came out in 75.
Yeah.
So almost 20 years straight of
experience. So that's the other thing is that I've also been watching Go Ranger. And I'm like 6 or 7 episodes into that now.
Okay.
And it is fantastic.
Okay.
It is so good. And
I really enjoyed that manga.
Yeah.
I do want to watch the show at some point.
Yeah.
There are a couple of movies as well.
There's tons of Sentai movies.
Yeah. But Go Ranger specifically. Mm-hmm. But no, I've been watching that, and it's been really interesting to contrast that against both Zyranger mm-hmm. and also against Power Rangers, because no Zords, it's very much a hand-to-hand and weapons kind of thing, but the pre-giant robot bits are very, very similar. And the composition of the team mm-hmm. from Zyranger to Go Ranger is very, very similar. And Zyranger is executed with a lot more practice. Mm-hmm. But even Go Ranger has qualities about it that would have been completely unseen on American television at the time. Yeah. It just visually looks so much different than anything that was coming out of American TV at the time. Mm-hmm.
We've had superhero stuff. I mean, when did Batman debut in comic form?
Superman is 38, Batman's 39 or 40.
So, like, we've had superhero stuff, and I know there was superhero-esque TV shows, but like you said, nothing like with this level of panache was coming out.
I'm interested to take a look at that.
Yeah. I think you're going to have to.
I'm going to have to take a look at it to put some clips in so people...
Nelson's two watch list never gets shorter. It only gets longer.
It's mostly my fault.
It's funny. I think it was episode 9 where you started talking about the West Wing, and I was like, all right, hold on. It's just... which that part, oh my god, that going back, that part cracked me up so much because mm-hmm. we were already going and then you just lean over.
Did you ever watch The West Wing? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. we were pretty far down a rabbit hole. So speaking of which, down a rabbit hole, let's do a Rangers recap.
All right,
Rangers recap. This is no clowning around.
Yeah. Power Rangers, episode 11, No Clowning Around, was written by Mark Hoffmeyer and directed by Adrian Carr. This is Mark's first episode, but we're going to see him in the next several. He goes on to write 4 episodes. Adrian Carr has previously directed Day of the Dumpster, High Five, and A Pressing Engagement.
Okay.
So some of the best episodes that we've had so far.
And also just like the first.
The first, yeah.
The first couple. That's cool.
This episode is real bonkers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
This one, it goes at such a pace that, like, if I was telling somebody who had never experienced Power Rangers where to start, of the episodes we've watched so far, I think this might be the one.
This would be a good jumping off
point. It is just all killer, no filler. They open at a carnival with basically no exposition. Zach is walking on stilts, and the shots they did of him and his stunt double here were very well executed. The wide shot makes it look like Zach is on stilts. They don't use the wide shot very often. Mm. It worked. Obviously, Billy is overly verbose because that's a thing that they are really leaning into these next 3 or 4 episodes.
Oh, yes. Oh, I hate it. I hate it so much.
Especially the next one, I think.
Well, the next one is Power Rangers Punk.
Oh, no. So the episode
13 is what I'm thinking about.
Yeah. While Billy is being overly verbose, the Power Rangers walk off and they do a shot of the clown that they had been kind of goofing around with. Mm-hmm. And...
alarm bells.
Yeah, well, so with absolutely no context. Sirens,
klaxons, everything.
Yeah, evil clowns. Yeah. Nope.
With absolutely no context, they just drop a monster face over the top of his face. Just do an overlay, and it's not explained. He's just a monster clown, and we're supposed to know this right out of the gate.
Yeah, he's a putty, and then the other one is the monster.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
So the episode rockets along. It moves very quickly, especially compared to the languid pace of some of the like middle episodes that we've seen. This one felt... intentional in a way that a lot of them leading up to this have not. And I'm going to put that down to Mark Hoffmeyer actually writing an episode as opposed to just trying to string some elements together.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
At the carnival, a clown is juggling. Trini shows up with a young girl.
It's her cousin Sylvia.
It is her cousin Sylvia. Bulk and Skull steal some cotton candy, and this leads to one of the more iconic visuals from the intro where they're waving the cotton candy next to their face.
There's like a girl like doing a ring toss or something.
Two girls doing
ring toss. And they just like pluck their cotton candy off of the little paper cones. It's a very in character.
It's one of the first examples that we've seen of Bulk and Skull being bullies successfully.
Right.
And it rescues their characters in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. They can bully everybody except the Power Rangers.
Because the Power Rangers are the bigger bullies.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much, yeah.
Billy is offered the option to juggle some eggs.
Yep.
And obviously he cannot do this, so the eggs smash on Bulk and Skull because we have to humiliate them with food.
He's just like, all right, well, I'll try juggling, but also, f*** these guys.
And the clown, it's worth mentioning, is trying to get Sylvia,
right,
Trini's young cousin, to do the juggling.
Alarm bells going crazy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Why does this clown want a child?
So we cut to Rita, and Rita confirms the clown is evil, and then monologues a bit about the plot. And
the clown's name is Pineapple.
Yes, the clown's name is Pineapple. This bit with Rita was very, very quick and felt a little rushed, not necessarily in a bad way, but just like it was perfunctory. We needed to get past Rita. We needed to establish that this was her plot. Mm-hmm. The Rangers are doing some kind of gymnastics thing that they do very badly.
Human pyramid, which is like, I think one of the most, I mean, Ryan would be able to tell us, one of the most basic, easiest things to do in gymnastics. And they're like struggling, which doesn't make any sense.
Again, Incredibles theory.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Pineapple the Clown then just kidnaps Sylvia. Sylvia is kidnapped by Pineapple. And according to Rita, Sylvia has been turned into a cardboard cutout. Mm-hmm. Now, later in the episode, she's not a cardboard cutout and she's just dehydrated.
Yeah, she's dehydrated.
She has been dehydrated. Yep. So apparently humans, when you dehydrate them, turn into cardboard.
What's like those novelty towels you can get that are like compressed into a little brick?
Yes.
And even if you take them out of the plastic, they just stay that way until you wet them and then they
Like the little dinosaur things.
Right.
Like
the little dinosaur capsules, that kind of stuff.
So further antics ensue. Jason causes a stampede at the carnival.
I made a note of this. Oh, now they're just creating a panic. What is this episode?
Yeah, they straight up cause a riot.
He grabs a bullhorn and he shouts, "Everyone get out. It's a trap from Rita," or something.
Rita's attacking. And it's like, hey, you can't tell a couple hundred people to just run.
Right.
Because that's how people get trampled and die.
Yeah.
But also, why would anybody know who Rita is?
I think town knows seen who Rita Repulsa
multiple
is,
giant monsters in the city.
But no one has said Rita Repulsa is responsible for these monsters. The Power Rangers don't have a spokesperson. Did Jason just out himself as a Power Ranger?
I don't know. I think they just
make it seem like monsters, everybody run, you know, fire in a crowded building.
Well, also like Rita has appeared multiple times on Earth, like very prominently. I don't know if she's done like TV broadcasts per se.
Yeah. I think they know, who Rita Repulsa is.
I think it's plausible that some of the crowd might know. That's a good point to bring up, that Jason is a total rando in a red tank top who's just there with everyone else. Now, is he technically correct that the fair is a trap? Yes. But that is totally incidental. And it is a miracle. And if this was a different kind of show, then like multiple injuries and potential deaths would have occurred as a result of this. And that's something he'd have to like carry with him and deal with and maybe like get some emergency response training.
Yeah.
There's multiple Sentai and Power Ranger shows that are based around just the concept of emergency rescue workers.
What does the collateral damage from this look like?
Exactly. But because this is Power Ranger season one, it's just...
We're not thinking about
everybody's that fine. It's not a big deal. You can shout fire in a crowded theater and everyone gets away fine.
So in the meantime, Trini has taken Sylvia's cardboard cutout to Alpha. And
Billy's garage.
Yeah.
Actually, I have this noted. Trini takes Sylvia back to Billy's garage because he has a quasitronic molecular generator.
The quasitronic molecular generator in my garage could be the answer.
Yeah, we're back to the quasitronics.
Yes.
I also made a note of how like high def and well printed that cutout was.
Yeah.
Like that was a really well made prop. They only made the one.
Yeah.
But it was really good.
Alpha determines through analysis that Sylvia is dehydrated and proceeds to just dump a bucket of water on her. This doesn't work. And then it does work.
Yeah. It takes a second.
And then Alpha throws a bucket of water in her face, which she blames on Trini. Mm-hmm. And Alpha tries to hide amongst the...
Yeah, he tries to pretend to be, empty. Yeah, Sylvia doesn't notice him, so...
In the meantime, Pineapple the Clown turns into Pineoctopus.
Uh-huh. God, I hated this monster.
And Pineoctopus tries to dehydrate the Rangers, but he can't.
Yep. It says, your suits protect you from my magic. Yeah. Well, that's... Thank you for this thrilling drama.
Yeah. Right? And it seems like Rita knew, because she immediately sends Goldar down to help him. So. Just like, get down there. Help Pineoctopus. He sucks.
So
help him. God.
In addition to Goldar, Rita makes the monster grow. The Rangers summon the Zords and they fight as small Zords for a while and then go tank mode.
We saw some mixed unit tactics in this one, which I always love.
And this is, I think, the second time that we've seen them do anything with the Zords other than just form the tank or the Megazord.
Yeah, we got the Triceratops chain horns and we got the Mastodon ice breath. It's like,
That bit was great.
Tactics.
But then they go tank mode, which is always a bad idea.
Never works.
And then they transform into the Megazord. And I don't even think they use the sword. I think they use their head beam, but neither here nor there.
Oh, yeah. The horn crest blast thing, which is awesome. Again, love to see more techniques and attacks than just the sword. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the sword slash, but it's so cool when other things get used.
Later, they reopen the carnival. Trini and Sylvia share a tender moment, and they have a moral of this story, which is that children shouldn't run off.
Yeah, don't run off without your parents at a crowded place. You'll get turned into a cardboard cutout.
So I have two notes here that I want to make sure that we call out. One is that the Rangers all shouted Morphin in unison as an exclamation. Morphin! I don't remember them doing that before, but it was real, real silly.
So we've seen Morphitudinal and Morphinominous and all those sorts of things, but this one is just Morphin.
And that they all did it in unison?
Yeah.
As if they had been practicing. It didn't scan.
It doesn't hit.
Yeah.
It doesn't hit.
The other note that I have here is that the Megazord talks in this one.
Yeah.
Megazord sequence has been initiated. Megazord activated.
I don't remember the Megazord talking before, but the Megazord says, Megazord sequence has been initiated, and Megazord activate.
Yeah, that caught me off guard.
I can't remember if it's been in previous episodes, but I think this is a mainstay from this.
It is, like, because when it happened, I was like, heard that before, but I think this is the first episode that it says.
Yeah, I think this is
super, super noticeable,
And I didn't like it. Why would the Megazord talk?
Because that's a feature they can put in toys, but...
But they didn't.
They do.
Recently, though. Not at the time.
Yeah, but I'm sure at the time they still tried.
I don't remember an electronic Megazord that uses this specific audio. I had a few notes about this one.
Sure.
I mean, I've already brought up just that the Stranger Danger sirens are fucking gone.
Oh, nuts. The entire time.
Yeah.
These clowns are so creepy. This might be why so many people from our generation have a fear of clowns.
I mean, that's one of
the... Definitely contributes, but specifically... I mean, I don't know. How do y'all feel that the perception of Stranger Danger has changed since we were kids?
Well, I mean, with the internet, I mean, it's more prevalent, but also I feel like people are dumber.
That's like a whole new different dimension.
Yeah, because with me, growing up, Stranger Danger also coincided with the whole To Catch a Predator thing.
Yeah, right.
And so it's like, I've always been on that, like, DTA, don't trust anybody, you know, unless they give you a reason to trust them. And even then, you know, keep one eye out.
The important thing to remember is that kids especially, but anybody, you are much more likely to be harmed by someone you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Than by a stranger.
Yeah, no, the statistics do not bear up around that.
In this particular episode, the way that they have the clowns in particular behaving was designed to set off alarm bells. Mm-hmm. But it is also not the way that someone would behave if they were actually trying to kidnap that child.
Right. So, like, I can remember my parents giving me a talk just like, if we're out somewhere, stick with us. Mm-hmm. If someone tries to get you to go somewhere with them, don't do that. And that was basically the talk. I was just like, okay, that makes sense to me. Like, I know y'all. I live here with y'all. I don't know whoever at the mall or whatever. You mentioned this is not how that actually happens.
Right.
Human trafficking is a real thing and is a real danger and should be eradicated. But this is not how it happens.
Right.
It is almost always a family member or a family friend or... you know, mom's new boyfriend or who knows.
Yeah.
And so this just feels very jarring.
It's very of the times.
It is very of the times. Some of the other notes that I have here is one of the putties walks behind the carousel and transforms into a putty from a clown and comes out, but he's still wearing his neck ruff and holding his umbrella.
Yeah.
And he is like, twirling it in the most menacing possible way you can twirl an umbrella, and it that cracks.
So I don't know if this was intentional, but a lot of the putties as clowns bits really harkened back to A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. Interesting. Oh, snap. Okay. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
That is where my head went immediately. And I've watched A Clockwork Orange twice, which is not something that I
that's a real one and done movie.
It is a movie that you do not watch two times. But the second time was with someone who had never seen it. And I was like, well, you got to watch it once. A Clockwork Orange, for those who are not familiar, is an incredibly brutal film about some incredibly brutal people who do some really horrible things. And over the course of the film, they move and act and dance like these clowns. Mm-hmm. And the way that they are menacing is the same way that these putties are coming out. They're wearing very similar kind of affectations and frills and the umbrella. And
I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was intentional or not, but
who knows?
It is burned into my brain.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah.
The other moment I wanted to call out is when Jason is fighting putties by the whatever the flippy cage thing is. They're trying to grab him by his tank top straps through the bars. And I just thought that was hysterical. They can just barely reach and there's just those little straps to pinch. Yeah. And they're just like, gotcha. And he's like, oh no, I can't get away.
One of the things that made this episode really interesting was the amount of US footage.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of it.
That's part of the reason why it was able to rocket along so quickly is that they just didn't use very much mask footage, which means that this is probably one of the more expensive episodes for them to produce. And in spite of that, I didn't like this. I didn't like the clowns. I didn't like putting the child in this much obvious, real feeling danger, as opposed to a lot of the other episodes where the danger is more abstract.
No, it reminds me of that moment in Happy Birthday, Zach, when Bulk and Skull are being genuinely menacing to Kim and Jenny.
Yeah.
And that it has a whole undertone there that's not like, haha, give me your lunch money. It's something far more serious than that. And that I definitely got that feeling from this episode as well.
That's not to say this is a bad episode. It did a good job. It moves very quickly. And like I said, I think it would be a great, you're trying to figure out what Power Rangers is about. This is what Power Rangers is about. But it wasn't fun.
No.
There was a moment at the beginning that got a laugh out of me for those Yowie fans out there when Zach falls off the stilts and Jason catches him. He's like, my hero.
I mentioned this. So I mentioned this to my girlfriend. I mean, I've mentioned on the show before how in Happy Birthday, Zach, and there's lots of other little moments, when Zach realizes they've built him this surprise party, he grabs Kim and Trini's hands and is like, oh my God, thank you so much. So my shipper brain's already been going. And then this happens when Zach falls down and it's not played off for homophobia points like we have seen previously in the show. Yeah. It's actually, it's not focused on.
But Jason gives it just a little,
Jason's
you.
Jason's just and I'm like, I have a question for you specifically.
Okay.
At the very end, when Billy is on his paint little stilts, he has a computer attached to the stilts. What is that? Can you find out?
Yeah, I'll find out. Hold on.
Was that an onboard balance thing?
Or? I don't know.
It was supposed to be, and they talk about it. Billy's like, with my new invention, anybody can walk on stilts. But they cut away from it so quickly that I didn't .
Yeah, I barely got that. That's a funny one.
You don't get a very good shot of it.
No, unfortunately.
It looks like it might even be a cash register.
It could be a cash drawer.
Yeah. It's got a big piece missing where the screen would have been.
So they just put a piece of the computer on the side of some stuff.
They took two probably 7-foot 4x4s and glued a bunch of shit to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That looks about right. That sounds about right for the 90s.
Yeah, no idea. No idea. Bum, 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 bum,
bum, bum. You got the research this week, Ethan?
Yeah, I'm going to handle it.
Before you actually start on the research, I was checking the Power Rangers wiki to get some info. And there are several things about this episode that I should have included in my recap that I just read in the Power Rangers wiki that we should call out. Zordon's not in this one. They never go to the command center.
Oh, yeah, they don't. Right. Yeah.
And I didn't notice, but they don't. They're in Billy's garage.
Mm-hmm.
One of the DVD extras that they did down the road when they actually released the series on DVD talks about the production of Power Rangers. And this is the first episode that they finished.
Interesting.
Huh.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Is it the first one that they filmed?
It is the first episode that they completed. Okay. So they were filming episodes concurrently.
Probably why it has the least mask footage in it. That makes a lot of sense.
They were doing all of this footage, all the American side footage at the same time across several episodes. Yeah. This is the first one that they finished. The wiki also calls out that this is the first time a monster disguises itself as a human in the show so far.
Yeah.
In Power Rangers, That's pretty standard for Dora monsters in Sentai, but yeah.
This is also the first episode where a monster is destroyed by the Megazord's crest, which I did mention, but...
Also, this monster sucks.
Yeah, it's not a great monster.
Costume sucks.
I don't know what a Pinoctopus is supposed to be.
Until they said the name, I was like, what am I looking at here? Because it just looked like just a bundle of like confetti and stuff. Like, it looked... stupid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because like with the eye guy, it was like, ew, that's gross. Mm-hmm. But this was like the first one I looked at and was like,
it's just kind of like whatever.
Sucks.
And so this is the Sentai monster is Dora Endos, and I don't know what his deal is.
On to the research.
I just wrote it this morning, so it's maybe not as long or in depth as they have been previously.
That's all right. We're already running close to
like,
an hour.
I just want to give an account of my whereabouts and activities of the past like 36-ish hours.
Where you been, bud?
So my main gig is at a brewery here in town, and I had probably 30-something kegs to wash. They take 11 minutes apiece. I can only do one at a time, and I have to refill the chemical reservoirs in between batches.
Jeez.
So I was at work for 9 hours yesterday from like noonish to like 9 p.m. Went home, watched 3 episodes of Sentai, took notes, wrote 3 summaries, went to bed. Got up, made a delicious steak wrap for breakfast with some homemade tzatziki sauce.
Ooh.
Pretty choice. Sat down back in front of the computer, watched 3 episodes of Power Rangers, took notes, and wrote this research topic. So like, anyway. This is Intro to Tokusatsu Part 2. So all the way back in Episode 5, I presented a research topic called Intro to Tokusatsu Part 1, and I think the time is right to continue that. We left off essentially with the creation of Ultraman by special effects master Tsuburaya Eiji in the 60s, in 1966 to be specific. Technically, Ultra Q was the beginning of that franchise, which did not feature the titular hero, but rather followed a squad of paranormal and kaiju researchers. Ultraman 66 followed this up, although was not technically a sequel. Tsuburaya Productions would go on to make even more Ultraman shows in 1967, 71, 72, 73, 74, 80, 96, 97, 98, 01, 04, 05, and 06. There have also been stage shows, manga, and foreign adaptations, as well as several language dubs released. I think Netflix did like a CG anime Ultraman at some point. As we discussed in episode 1, 1971 witnessed the release of the first Kamen Rider TV show created by Ishinomori Shotaro, whose other creation, Himitsu Sentai Goranger, would be released in 1975. The Metal Heroes subgenre of tokusatsu, which we have mentioned once or twice in passing on this show, kicked off in 1982 with Space Sheriff Gavan. The upshot of all of this is that from the late 60s into the 80s, roughly 15 to 20 year period, was a massive explosion of the tokusatsu genre in television. And between toy sales and ad revenue, the studios and production companies were printing money and moreover gained themselves an absolutely devoted fan base, which is partly why so many of these series are ongoing today. Because like the people making Zyuranger, Sugimura Noboru and all these other people would have grown up on Ultraman and Kamen Rider even, and, which was not that far before, but they would have been fans of those shows. And as I mentioned, creators like Hideaki Anno, creator of Evangelion, is like directly inspired by these and, you know, works in a different medium of animation. But now he's also directed, I think, 2 different live action movies now. And it's just like a constantly rolling thing of like growing up, watching, and then getting inspired, moving into that field, and then more the kids and teens who are watching your stuff, then they grow up and get inspired.
If only every career path was that easy. God, man.
Ishinomori speaks at length in various interviews about how he was directly inspired by Astro Boy, and how like his dream job was to just do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he does.
Yep.
You know, you mentioned the toy sales here, and there's one kind of aspect of that that at some point we'll probably talk about in more detail, but that I want to call out here, and that's these toys started late 70s, 78, 79. Mm-hmm. You get the Shogun Warriors line in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And the Shogun Warriors are like straight based on various tokusatsu characters, a bunch of different characters, and also Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodan. And,
we have a Super Shogun scale Optimus Prime over there by Nelson right now. And I think there are probably still a few in this building. We don't have any in the room at the moment. Yeah. So this is the size we're talking about.
Yeah, so they're these giant robots.
These things are huge.
They're huge. They're blow mold.
And they all feature...
They do rocket fists.
Oh, wow. Rocket fists.
Pretty limited articulation, pretty limited accessories, but they're big, they're bright, they're colorful, and
really f***ing big.
They were relatively cheap at the time. This Optimus Prime is not. He's like $300.
Yeah, no, this thing seems expensive.
Yeah. So the Shogun Warriors were done at that size, but they were also done at like a 3-inch scale.
I feel like, because I'm looking at these Shogun Warriors things, and like some of them seem like they have a lot of detail to put into such like a 3-inch scale thing.
Yeah, and the little ones were die-cast.
Wait, is this on wheels?
It's on wheels. They were on wheels.
I dread to think how many siblings have been beamed in the noggin with a die-cast 3-inch figure of a Mazinger or whoever.
And they did a 5-inch line as well. But so in 75, when Goranger came out, they did a line of Sofubi, of little Japanese soft vinyl.
Craftsman's been on that Sofubi tip for a couple weeks now.
So at a toy show I went to in February, I picked up the run of the Goranger Sofubi.
I remember seeing a picture of those.
From the original run. And they're incredible. And I wish that we had gotten something like that out of the later shows, you know, because they're just little like 3-inch guys. Same articulation, just, you know, shoulders move and the waist rotates and that's it. But it's the Rangers.
Mm-hmm. Do they still have like firing fists?
No, because they're itty bitty.
Okay, because I was like, we already talked about the choking hazards and all that.
But yeah, so the toy sales were big. This was a huge aspect of all of this. We see it a lot with Bandai. It took decades for Power Rangers to become something more than just an arm of Bandai, to the point that like. Now that Hasbro is in control of the Power Rangers merchandising, Bandai is a much weaker company as a result.
Yeah.
And they pivoted a lot to like electronic products also. Bandai Namco makes video games.
Yeah. In the next episode, we will talk about some of Bandai's video game output. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the toys from the go, all the way back as far as you can go, have been a critical part of this. Mm-hmm.
There are also many other franchises and shows which have escaped mention here today, so go explore. You're bound to find something you'll like, and thanks to the efforts of fan subbers, many of these shows are hugely more accessible to non-Japanese speakers than they have been historically. Now to take a sort of another little U-turn, as with the example of Andrew's dad that he mentioned in a previous episode, bits and pieces of tokusatsu have been filtering over to other parts of the world to various degrees since the beginning. Godzilla, obviously, as well as Ultraman and others. But the Savannization process might just represent the most definite and directed effort in this regard. We had a VHS of Godzilla vs. Megalon when I was a kid, for example. It was a pretty straightforward English dub with no editing or localization. Despite its many flaws and general cringiness, I can respect the vision for Power Rangers and the ambition of the project. Saban is a slime ball and a despicable human being, but he had a solid idea here, and I think the ongoing legacy speaks for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of astounding because just like with these television producers coming up with the previous manga and tokusatsu series in Japan and being inspired by those and creating things based off of those, you end up with a similar experience here where a lot of people saw Astro Boy and decided that they were going to get into animation because they saw Astro Boy or saw Ultraman. And I have to imagine that at least some of the people who got involved with Power Rangers were people who had grown up, much like my dad did, with Ultraman.
Oh, yeah.
Or the Space Giants, I think, or Three Space Giants.
I saw that mentioned in my research for today.
That was a hugely popular show stateside that nobody basically talks about today.
It's funny you mentioned that. Two of the actors from Power Ranger Hyperforce were in both Super Sentai and Power Rangers.
Okay.
Not the same adaptation, sure. I think. I remember the characters' names. Let me see if I can remember the actors' names. Peter Sudarso and his brother, Yoshi. Their family is Indonesian, but they worked in the Japanese film industry and were in Sentai shows. And then also, like, kind of double dipped and came over to California or wherever they were filming and filmed Power Ranger stuff as well. Which is just pretty neat, pretty cool that, you know, there are certain people who can not just take inspiration from and go to work in, but also, like, straddle both
absolutely.
Production chains, kind of.
You know, we've talked a lot about David Yost.
Mm-hmm.
Yost is one of the actor who plays Billy. He's one of the producers on several of the more recent Power Rangers series. He has taken a very active role in this thing because he's one of the more recognizable faces from the show, and he suffered.
I walked off set one day during the middle of lunch, during halfway through the day. I just had made a decision. I'd been thinking about it for a good week. And the reason that I walked off is because I was called f*** it one too many times.
And we talked about
Paul Schreier.
How he comes out of this show and parlays it into a full career. And it is almost like once you've started doing this thing, it's real easy to keep doing it.
It's funny. I was at a bar talking to a guy about this podcast because I've kind of become the talk of part of our friend group because of this podcast.
Of course.
Like, everyone's like, I'll see the Power Rangers podcast. And I'm like, guys, I mean, yeah.
It's not a big deal or anything.
I started telling them about the Hyperforce stuff.
Have you listened to it at all?
I've listened to a little bit of it.
Yeah.
But they started doing a comic run of the Hyperforce stuff.
Yes. There's a crossover event in the middle of the only season of the Hyperforce podcast with the Shattered Grid comics event, which was really cool and fun and interesting. And then they pick up the story of that squad of Rangers after the end of season one. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to make another season at some point. That was all pre-COVID.
Right.
We live in a different universe now.
Yeah.
But this dude was, he was also telling me about how they finally got Amy Jo Johnson back to like help out on like a run of comics that they're doing like strictly for like Pink Ranger stuff.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Our universe's Kimberly gets into some cool stuff, and then there are multiple alternate universe Kimberlys who go into some crazy wild stuff.
And it's pretty much like kind of like a flashpoint event of like Pink Rangers from the perspective of our universe's Kimberly.
That's going to be fun.
At least that's how he explained it to me. So can't wait for that. Yeah. So thanks, Noah, for putting me on that.
Do we have anything else, gentlemen?
Nope. I think we've had too much. This one's gone.
Yeah, we still got two more to do.
All right. We'll be back next time to discuss episodes 12 of Zio Ranger, Papa Wa Kuketsuki, Papa's a Vampire, and Power Rangers, Power Ranger Punks. Is it Power Rangers Punks or Power Rangers Punks? I don't know. If you've enjoyed the show, please feel free to send me $5. And if you want to find me online, don't. But you can follow the show on the Fediverse at Kenkyu Sentai Podcast Rangers at meet.communitymedia.network. Andrew, how can people get in touch and what should they look out for?
I'm at AJRoach42 at retro.social, and I just opened a bookstore, himlockbazaar.com. That's BAZAAR, like a marketplace, not like something strange.
Yes, you sure did.
Yeah. Nelson.
What do you want to book?
Folks, hey, I'm not going to lie to you. Oh, I don't really have much for this week besides working class music. Go watch that.
Hey, Nelson.
Yeah.
When are you going to record another album?
I'm working on it. We're probably going to record the last Holders album here. Whenever Cole gets back from being a super famous musician. Whoa. and, you know, I'm just working on stuff at home. But yeah, go watch working class music. Watch more stuff on New LJ TV. Yeah.
Okay.
That's all I got.
That's all the show we have for you today. Thank you so much for listening. And thanks also to Hurley Burley and the Volcanic Fallout for the use of their song Colossal Might, Totally Radical Instrumental Version, for our intro and outro music. Kenkyu Sentai Podcast Rangers is licensed CC by SA and produced in collaboration with the New LJ Television at the LJ Makerspace, which stands on the ancestral, unceded, stolen, and occupied lands of the Cherokee people. You can learn more about the Makerspace by visiting ljmakerspace.org, and you can learn more about the Cherokee people by visiting cherokee.org. Strength, love, and solidarity to all oppressed people, and in the words of a wise man, capitalism, go home.